It's Wednesday, August 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. Vice President heads to Turkey to bolster relations. Two EU members seek uniformity in the fight against terrorism.
We could be exposing not only our own personal privacy information, but corporate information or government information.
A popular mobile game could accumulate more than just points. Also ahead, U.S. presidential politics and new adventures in virtual reality. It's all on today's International Edition. Turkey is backing away from claims that a child suicide bomber sent by Islamic State carried out Saturday's blast at a Kurdish wedding that killed 54 people. Prime Minister Binali Yildirim on Monday said speculation that a child was responsible was based on rumors from witnesses. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan had described the bomber as being as young as 12 years old and sent by Islamic State. No one has claimed responsibility, but the style of the attack and the type of bomb used were similar to previous blasts blamed on Islamic State. The White House condemned the attack in Gaziantep and says Vice President Joe Biden will visit Ankara on Wednesday to reaffirm the U.S. commitment to work together with Turkey against the scourge of terrorism. VOA White House correspondent Cindy Sain shares more on the visit with International Edition host Sarah Williams.
This is also a very sensitive time for U.S.-Turkish relations because, of course, Turkey suffered this very traumatic failed coup attempt on July 15th, and Biden is the highest-ranking Western leader to visit since then. And I'm hearing from some Turkish analysts here in Washington that a lot of people in Turkey are feeling that the West has not showed enough sympathy and has been too critical about the crackdown, which has been going on since the coup. But they think that the West should be a little more understanding. So I think Biden is going to have a difficult visit.
Yeah, and this comes certainly soon after that coup, and Fethullah Gulen, who is the Muslim cleric who is based here in the United States, the Turkish government, certainly the president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has blamed that coup on Gulen, although Gulen denies that. So there is a lot of, I guess you could say, antipathy kind of, you know, from some of the Turks towards the U.S.
Yes, that's right, and has been very much played up in the Turkish media, and I'm hearing that most Turks firmly believe that the U.S. was either behind the coup or at least that U.S. intelligence services knew about it. Of course, something that the White House has very strongly denied, publicly denied, and is saying that, look, we have an extradition treaty with Turkey. We've had it for 30 years, and these things, you know, have to follow the rules and the guidelines of the treaty. And the decision on whether or not to extradite this 80-some-year-old cleric who is at a compound in Pennsylvania will be based on evidence. But I am also hearing that some U.S. Justice Department officials are heading to Turkey this week to look at the evidence that their counterparts there in Turkey have gathered.
Now, this meeting between Mr. Biden and Turkish officials occurs as the war continues in Syria and Turkey borders Syria. How much will the violence, the continuing violence in Syria, be a part of these talks?
I think it will be a big part, Sarah, and the U.S. realizes very well that Turkey is a crucial NATO ally, a crucial ally in fighting the Islamic State terrorist group. Turkey being a victim, as you said, of this horrific attack on the wedding. And the White House, for example, is saying, you know, we please want Turkey to do more to secure the border with Syria, but realizing, not pushing too hard, because realizing what a difficult task this is for Turkey.
VOA White House correspondent Cindy Say. Time for us now to check out what's buzzing online. Our social media reporter G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 to do just that. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, what do you have for us today?
Another day of some type of controversy surrounding the presidential candidates. And we have both today. Who do you want to start with?
Well, let's go with Clinton.
Sure. There has been allegations of her not being physically fit enough to be president, and on Monday night, she appeared on a talk show, it's called Jimmy Kimmel Live, and denied those allegations. In fact, she called them a wacky strategy by Donald Trump, And in response to questions about her health, she opened a jar of pickles right during the interview.
Well, we know how difficult that can be. I guess
a sign of strength for sure.
Yes, if Hillary Clinton can do it, I'm sure anybody can. What about Donald Trump?
This time, it's actually about Mrs. Trump, not Mr. GOP nominee Donald Trump's wife, Melania Trump, is taking legal action against UK-based Daily Mail and other media outlets for escort allegations. Her lawyer said legal notices were issued to the publications for making false and defamatory statements about her reportedly being an escort back in the 1990s. So that's before she married Trump. As for the online reaction, top comments argued such scenario is probable because they believe she also got married to Trump for his reputation of being wealthy.
Okay, well, is there anything else trending?
American automotive company Tesla announced two new cars, and it's been trending on social media Tuesday afternoon. I hope you like cars, and I hope you like fast cars, because that's what we're going to talk about. Tesla designs and manufactures electric cars, as you know, and it's on Twitter, at Tesla Motors. And it sent out this tweet about 2 hours ago. Introducing P100D with ludicrous mode, more performance and range for Model S and Model X. And what ludicrous mode means is that it can send a four-door sedan from 0 to 60 miles per hour in just 2.8 seconds flat. That's all from me today.
That's amazing. Thanks so much for that wrap-up, G. You may tweet us your comments and questions to our Twitter stream at VOA_IE. You'll find myself and G on Twitter there as well, at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories trending in Asia, Chinese, Japanese, South Korean leaders discuss regional tensions. North Korea plants new landmines along the demilitarized zone. Philippine war on drugs triggers widespread criticism, according to a Senate investigation. 100 U.S. troops deployed after Taliban's tactical victories in Afghanistan. Prime Minister Lee's health scare exposes Singapore's leadership uncertainty. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, on the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. France and Germany are calling on the European Union to adopt common rules to limit messaging encryption or codes on social media in the battle against terrorism. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has more on a meeting Tuesday of French and German interior ministers in Paris.
French Interior Minister Bernard Cazeneuve said France and Germany do not want to ban encrypted messaging, but rather to work with social media groups to limit its use by Islamist radicals.
Les échanges de plus en plus systématiques.
Speaking alongside his German counterpart, Thomas de Maizière, Cazeneuve said European intelligence services and magistrates should be able to identify coded messages used by extremists through applications like Telegram and WhatsApp and use them as evidence against perpetrators. The two countries want European Union member states to discuss common legislation at a meeting next month. Authorities say Islamist militants are increasingly using encrypted messaging to spread propaganda and facilitate their terrorist operations. Both France and Germany have been hit by several attacks over the summer. Cazeneuve also said French officials had detained seven people this month with suspected terrorism links, including three with clear attack plans. The U.S. government has also tried to work with tech companies to limit extremist activity. But some opponents argue European governments already have plenty of surveillance instruments, and the problem lies elsewhere. Guillaume Champeau, founder of the digital magazine Numerama, told French radio that authorities should instead rethink their surveillance operations to focus more on local intelligence gathering. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
U.S. Democrat presidential candidate Hillary Clinton appears to be enjoying an unusually comfortable lead in national polls over Republican rival Donald Trump. as Mr. Trump tries to raise ethical and legal questions about the Clinton Foundation, a charitable organization run by the Clintons. VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone is following the campaigns as we begin to enter the final weeks before the November 8th presidential election. So what's the latest on Donald Trump's efforts against Hillary Clinton?
For the moment, the Trump campaign seems to have an inroad here into at least raising an issue and keeping it front and center for a couple of news cycles, which is something they haven't been able to do in recent weeks, and focusing on the release of some emails not previously seen, questions about whether or not people bought access to the Secretary of State Clinton while she was in that job based on possible contributions to the Clinton Foundation, and now the Clinton campaign saying should she win that she will definitely distance herself from that. Trump saying she needs to do more. Trump also calling for a special prosecutor to be appointed to look into all these issues. The Trump campaign needs to find a way to get the focus back on Hillary Clinton because they've had a very rough period since the conventions, and the polls have shown that she's pulled into a rather steady lead in national polls and just as critically in some of the key what we call battleground state polls.
And coming out of the conventions, Trump seemed to be his own worst enemy for a few weeks, and then there's some internal turmoil going on in the campaign as well.
Yeah, we've seen a number of changes at the high level, and, you know, it's too early to be talking about the campaign perhaps being over, though some Republicans, I think, are worried about that and are already focused on saving Congress, saving Republican seats there. But if we get to a point where there is a Clinton victory down the line, I think they will look back to the period right after the conventions as a crucial period where Trump aided and abetted the questioning of his own temperament and his own, you know, fitness to serve as president, which played right into the central argument of the Clinton campaign.
We had the movement before the convention of some Republicans wanting to dump Trump and find another candidate to put up for president. Now they're kind of walking this fine line of, well, you know, we can't totally abandon him, but at the same time, we've got to save these down ticket races.
And, you know, I think we have somewhat seen a change in Trump's behavior of late. He's been a little more disciplined. He's trying to stick to the script that maybe with the new people taking over in his campaign and warning him that if he didn't stop sabotaging the campaign, that a number of these Republican Senate and House candidates were going to have to walk away from him, which would have further eroded his own presidential possibilities in the polls and in a number of key battleground states. We're seeing some Clinton leads in places like Virginia, in Florida, in New Hampshire, even in a place like North Carolina, where President Obama lost 4 years ago to Mitt Romney. These are alarmingly high margins for a Democrat at this point. And in the history of presidential campaigning going back 60 or 70 years, it's virtually unprecedented that someone who is behind by this much is able to come back. That being said, Trump is unpredictable. Let's see what happens.
Well, our strategy to stay on top is to stick with VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, thanks for your insight.
Anytime.
It's been a month and a half since the mobile game Pokemon Go launched here in America, and in that time, it has become the most popular in U.S. history with more than 100 million downloads. In the augmented reality game by Niantic, players use their mobile phones to catch Pokemon or pocket monsters that appear first on virtual maps and then on real-world images from their phone's cameras. This week's hashtag VOA TV show is all about the Pokemon Go phenomenon, and host Michael Lippin is right here to tell us more. Michael, it's not all fun and games, though, right?
Hi, Jim. That's right. Not all fun and games. You know, this game has millions of fans here in the U.S. and overseas, but it also has disruptive impacts in some places, and those impacts have made many other people anxious about it. One of the guests on today's show that I co-hosted with Nikki Strong was Mark Testoni. He's the CEO of IT security company SAP National Security Services. Speaking to us by phone, Testoni told us why the game could hurt people's privacy.
I think what Pokemon Go has has brought about is more awareness that, particularly the initial releases of the application, where there was a tremendous amount of information that was available to Niantic off of people's phones, basically that email information and contact information. Even with that restriction, when someone launches this application, they are availing their location through geospatial data that's captured, the message traffic that goes on, and other things off the computer. Cookies are downloaded. And what's also interesting, beyond just that as an individual's sake, a lot of our devices are being used in a corporate environment as well, certainly mine and many of us. So if we use our corporate device or government device and then log in and perhaps use our corporate credentials as part of that login, we could be exposing not only our own personal privacy information, but corporate information or government information. So there's a lot of unknowing things happening in the background here that are concerning.
Well, also on the show, we had two Pokemon Go fans. One joined us via Skype from Austin, Texas, Jimmy DeRocher, who had such a huge success with the game last week that, you know what, he got himself temporarily banned from it by Niantic. The other is Dan Friedel, who also is a writer for VOA Learning English. I asked Friedel how concerned he was by the privacy issues raised by Testoni.
Well, I think the initial release of the game had a lot of people excited to try to experience it, and they might have glossed over some of the security warnings and the releases you were giving Niantic and Google to get into some of your information. But they did release some updates further on that allowed you to restrict how much material on your phone that the app could collect. But I think Mark does make a good point about the fact that it can track where you're going in your own life.
Right.
The parking lot that you use on your commute to work, the metro station that you might use.
Many people might not realize that.
Some of those things, I suppose, if they got into the wrong hands. Now, I don't think I would be a target for anything, but perhaps, you know, the CEO of a business or something might be revealing his or her location. That could be problematic down the road.
Jimmy, the stuff that you heard Mark mention, does that have any bearing? Does that impact your perceptions of playing the game?
I think maybe perhaps a lot of the security part of the discussion is on the end user. It seems to me that it is really a lot about, you know, what you perceive of like a security, I guess, environment. Because if you're seeing a huge swarm of people, like even personally, like I've seen probably like 500, 600 people rushing to an area that's maybe like, you know, a 50 meter diameter. It does like present some sort of risk in a sense. You know, I don't know if I want to be part of like these major swarms. So like, I think a lot of it is just knowing, you know, what data you're providing to the company. Because if they do have your location at every moment, you have to know that eventually, like, if that was ever compromised, it would be on you. So I think there is something to be said about the security risk. That is definitely something that users should consider.
Well, for more of that conversation, you can watch the full show at voanews.com/#VOA or on my Facebook profile, Michael.Lippin. Jim, back to you.
Thank you very much, Michael. I don't see any Pokemon in the studio at the moment, but we always look for
#VOA. Oh, I just caught
VOA.
One.
There
no,
you
kidding,
go.
Kidding.
You find #VOA on our website anytime you want. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The political party convention is a critical part of the American electoral process. VOA correspondents are there, reporting the latest developments.
Kane Faribault, VOA News, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Tune in to VOA's extensive, up-to-the-minute coverage of the U.S. presidential election.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. Virtual reality, or VR, has exploded into the consumer market this year, and there are a lot of things that you can do with it, even watch a movie. But consumers are going to have to wait just a little bit longer for a fully immersive, full-length movie in virtual reality. VOA's Elizabeth Lee explains why.
Lucas Wilson loves new technology that allows him to be creative.
I have a love of shiny objects.
That's why he's now producing content in virtual reality.
Every director that I talk to, every creative that I talk to wants to do virtual reality because it's new and it's cool.
But it may be a while before consumers will see a full movie. Wilson says there are a couple of reasons for that. First, viewing technology is still in its infancy.
Just looking through those lenses, looking through those optics for more than about 15 or 20 minutes, you start to feel the eye strain, so you need to take a break.
He also says making virtual reality content is expensive, and companies are just beginning to figure out how to get consumers to pay for it. Some people say there is also the artistic challenge of telling a story in a full-length film, in which viewers have the freedom to look everywhere.
I don't think anybody knows if storytelling is appropriate yet. I think that until some attempts are made and we find out what the consumers want to watch, I don't think we'll know.
Until filmmakers start experimenting, Wilson says a 360-degree canvas allows directors more freedom.
It actually enhances creative ability if you want to look at it that way. They're not limited by a 16:9 frame anymore. You know, what happens is maybe for the first 10 or 15 seconds when someone puts on a VR headset, they're doing this and they're looking all over the place. But then after a while, they focus, because that's how you're physiologically wired.
Wilson says traditional filmmaking techniques such as lighting and framing are still relevant, but there is the additional tool of using high-tech sound technology such as Dolby Atmos to tell the story.
If you're in a headset and there's a sound that happens behind you, a loud sound that happens behind you, your limbic system does not allow you to not turn around. You have to turn around. So that all of a sudden whips your focus somewhere else in the frame, and that can be a storytelling technique.
Oh, what's up, T?
How's everything? Good to see you, man.
Wilson says a storyteller's goal is to communicate emotion and connect with the audience. He says the best way to achieve that is to immerse viewers in that environment. With virtual reality, that is now possible. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You can see that story at voanews.com. For Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Dan Crafton, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thanks for listening to International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is troubled by the August 12th arrest of Azerbaijani opposition activist Natiq Jafarli, the executive secretary of the opposition Real movement. The United States is also troubled by the arrests of additional activists. The activists who have been arrested are secular democratic opposition figures, though the authorities are citing alleged ties to Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen to justify some of these arrests. The arrests come ahead of a national referendum on amendments to the Constitution. The proposed amendments would lengthen the presidential term from 5 to 7 years and introduce the posts of first vice president and vice president, which would be appointed rather than elected. Other proposed changes relate to restricting certain fundamental freedoms in vaguely defined circumstances. The United States urges the government of Azerbaijan to submit the constitutional amendments for a joint Venice Commission and Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights opinion. The United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention visited Azerbaijan in May. In a statement, they said that they hold the view that human rights defenders, journalists, political and religious leaders, continue to be detained under criminal or administrative charges as a way to impair the exercise of their basic human rights and fundamental freedoms and to silence them. The United States said State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner urges the Azerbaijani government to release these and other activists incarcerated in connection with exercising their fundamental freedoms, to respect the fundamental freedoms of its citizens, and to allow an open public dialogue about the direction of the country, particularly in the run-up to the planned September 26 constitutional amendment referendum.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.